Well, distinguished guests and no less distinguished members of the media, my name is Glyn Davis and it's a great delight to welcome you this morning to launch our Festival of Ideas, which will take place from the 15th to the 20th of June this year, under the very provocative theme of climate change, cultural change. We all know, of course, that climate change poses dramatic challenges of many kinds, from rising sea levels to extended drought to devastating bushfires. And so it's entirely appropriate that the June Festival of Ideas will have this as its primary focus. And I say primary focus because, in fact, it will provide a way of thinking about both natural environment questions, but also about the cultural questions that follow. We'll begin the festival with Nobel Laureate Professor Peter Doherty, who'll open on Monday evening, the 15th of June, a date for everyone's diary, and he'll provide an overview of the issues, sometimes ominous, sometimes, we hope, optimistic. The festival will then bring together experts and scholars and academics and writers and commentators from across a wide swathe of disciplines and interests. But we also want to bring some new, some fresh thinking, some vigorous minds, some active imaginations drawn from this nation and overseas to the university. So it will be a very wide-ranging series of talks and events. It will encourage debate, it will encourage provocation, and we hope that it will induce a wider conversation here in Melbourne and more widely. But of course, cultural change will follow climate change. Cultural change is an inevitable outcome of climate change. It's going to be important to consider these two things together. What does it mean for Australia to see the Western world in economic and political decline? Does our future lie with the emerging economies of China and India, or with Europe and America, or some other course? These are questions we must face. And to help us face them, we're delighted to welcome to the festival a range of really interesting speakers, including Wang Gungwu, who's the Doyen of Chinese Studies and the Chair of the East Asian Institute at the National University of Singapore. In a world of global and national change, what is the role of the humanist, the artist, the writer? We're very excited at the prospect that Kate Grenville, Miles Franklin winning award novelist and Booker Prize nominee, will join the festival to explore these issues in a keynote lecture on writers in a time of change. The structure of this festival will be simple and direct. Each evening there will be a keynote lecture introducing one of the festival's principal themes. And the following day, panels of three or four leading authorities in the field will take up those themes and variations on the keynote lecture. So the morning following Peter Doherty's festival launching speech, for example, a panel comprising Ross Garneau, Professor David Caroli and Jim Falk will discuss warming of a warming world. After Kate Grenville's lecture, there will be a climactic Saturday morning with panels of poets and novelists discussing the effect of change on their work and reading from it. The festival will take place right here in this wonderful building, and we'll use the Carrillo Gantner Theatre here in the Sydney Meyer Asia Centre, barely 40 paces from the Swanson Street tram stop, one of the busiest in Melbourne. Every session will be free and open to the public. This is a gift from the University of Melbourne to the people of Victoria, and we hope they take it up in droves. This has all been possible because of the wonderful leadership this festival has enjoyed from someone who's a long familiar face here in Melbourne. The director of the festival, a graduate of this university, known to many as the former director of the National Gallery of Victoria, Patrick McCaughey. He's, of course, a highly visible and dynamic former director who's now working and living in the United States. He was at various stages the art critic for The Age, a Harkness Fellow at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. He taught at this and other institutions. He was a professor of visual arts at Monash. He was a visiting professor of Australian Studies at Harvard. Since 1988, he's lived and worked in the United States, first as director of the Athenaeum in Hartford, Connecticut, then as director of the Yale Center for British Art. He's published a series of monographs on leading Australian painters and on international art. He reviews regularly and writes in The Age, The Australian Book Review, The Australian Literary Review, and numerous American and British publications. Last night he gave a superb lecture on Caravaggio, the art of Caravaggio, just something he knocked off while visiting Melbourne, one of a number of lectures he's given in the last couple of days. It's a great delight to invite the director of the University of Melbourne Festival of Ideas, Professor Patrick McCaffrey, to talk to us.
Thank you very much, Vice-Chancellor, and ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure to be back at the University of Melbourne and facing the searing minds of the Melbourne media. Let me just tell you how, in one sense, this began. When I've come back regularly to Australia, I noticed one of the most extraordinary changes was that a good day in Melbourne was now a wet day. Rainy days were good and sunny days were bad. And this was a complete change in how people viewed where they lived. Indeed, wherever I went, people had this extraordinary awareness of water shortages and that climate change was hitting them. And indeed, I think we all know from experience that you're on the sharp receiving end of climate change. And in America, it's really only the Californians who are concerned about this. If you're around in New England, where I live, the most you ever hear about climate change is something like along the lines of, yes, I know, the polar bears are going to have a rough summer. And that's about the level of concern and awareness that people in New England have. And New England is by no means an unenlightened part of the world. So here was absolutely community awareness of climate change, but everybody's aware of it. But I think what people are less aware of is the effect of adapting to climate change or meeting the challenges. And in one of my earliest conversations was with Professor David Caroli. And as I said, I was being sort of shepherded, or Pro Vice Chancellor Warren Bevington was my kind of cop on the beat who directed me to various people. And he obviously had drawn up a list of the scariest people to talk to in the University of Melbourne. And I started with David Caroli, who was definitely the scariest, about what we have to do. And when I said to David, he was telling me what we had to do to get our carbon emissions down and so on and so on. I said to him, David, this is going to be traumatic. He said, not traumatic, transformative. And that was really the kernel of this festival of ideas. How do we respond to it? I may say other scary scientists, like Professor Roger Short, who's with us this morning, he ended his interview with me by saying, what are you going to do when you die? Which is a very unusual way to end an interview. And and I explained that I hadn't really thought about it, but he suggested I should not be cremated because I would thus make my largest carbon emission of my lifetime. So you can see how rocked I was walking around. But there are obviously other issues which are going to shape Australian cultural change in the next few years. And we hope to deal with them as well. The effect on Melbourne and the suburb is going to be acute. We've got a tremendous concentration on that. But there are other things. I mean, supposing the West does not emerge, as it once was, from its current fiscal and economic crisis. What does that really mean for Australia? And I think we have very interesting, exciting panels on both America and on Europe. And one of the most interesting issues is that almost everywhere else, except in Australia, the rise of Islam has become an extraordinary flash button point, a point of anxiety. But the Islamic community in Australia is a very different one, and we're going to have a particular session on that, it being a strength of the universities. And I suppose that in one sense, I don't regret for a moment the Chinese trying to invest $26 billion in Rio Tinto and buy half the minerals of Australia, because the Festival of Ideas is particularly interested in China. So I'm most grateful for Chinalco for putting China right back onto the front page of The Age, looking as though we're absolutely terribly wildly up-to-date in Kansas City. Because it's very interesting, isn't it? The whole population of Australia is almost exactly the same population as Greater Shanghai. You've just got to think about that. How important, therefore, is Australia to China if you're that small? Of course, it's very important. But you've only got to say, all of you love China, love the idea of it. Everybody who makes gloves in Australia wants to sell a pair of gloves to every second Chinese person, and their business would be made. But the moment you have the Chinese suddenly coming here, wanting to buy up stuff, land, you can buy anything you want, but don't you touch Prominent Hill with its gold and copper. And so the China-Australia relationship is a very, very important one, and it's going to shape Australian culture in the future. It's actually just to pick up on what the Vice-Chancellor said. As I was crisscrossing the university, hearing these terrifying accounts of what was going to happen to cultural change, to climate change, It really did strike me that one of the things that the University of Melbourne, and indeed Melbourne as a whole, is one of the great literary cities of the world. You have far more writers of an imaginative kind than Boston has, for instance. Try and find an important novelist in Philadelphia. It's extraordinary literary culture. And yet the writer, too, is caught up in change. And I thought we should hear the voice of the humanist as the hopefully concluding voice of this festival of ideas. Now it's my pleasure to introduce the scary Professor David Caroli, who's going to be in his best behaviour today, not terrify the press. But you probably all know that David is an ARC Federation Fellow, that great buyback of Australian intellectuals, and he is the Professor of Meteorology here. But it sounds so bland to say Professor of Meteorology. Believe you me, if Professor David Caroli had been doing meteorological studies when I was at the university, I would have rather done them than fine arts. Professor Caroli.
Well, thank you very much, Patrick. And I have been spending the weekend with my grandson because my daughter just had a second grandchild. And I can promise you, he doesn't find me the scariest person in the world. Although maybe the press and some of the people here will. Because unfortunately, I have been asked to reiterate some of our concerns, and in fact, some of the failings of the scientists. And I, you know, it's mea culpa. I am to blame because there are many aspects of climate change that we are understanding better now. And in particular, there was a meeting 3 weeks ago in Copenhagen, which had more than 2,500 both scientists and concerned people from a range of different areas. And they said that recent observations of the climate system confirm that the worst case projections of climate change that had been made only 2 years earlier in 2007 are now either at the very worst case or exceeding the very worst case of projections made only 2 years before. That there is absolutely no excuse for inaction in addressing climate change, because any delay in initiating reductions in greenhouse gas emissions has dramatic increases in the costs, both in the social and economic costs for reducing emissions and the social and economic costs for adapting to climate change. And as Patrick said, we've already seen rapid reductions in rainfall in southeastern Australia. One of the other things that Patrick hadn't noticed, but in New England, there have already been rapid reductions or changes due to climate change. The most important, or one of the most important industries in New England, is rapidly migrating north, maple syrup production. And there is already major reductions in maple syrup production in New England, and it's moving to where it's a little bit cooler. So next time you try to buy maple syrup grown in New England, you'll probably find it's actually been harvested in Canada. And it will continue to move north until it reaches the North Pole, where there's not much for the maple trees to grow on. So there are many, many things. There's one thing that human activity has been particularly good at for the last decade, and that's burning fossil fuels. We've been burning fossil fuels at a rate that is faster than even the worst case scenario, because of rapid economic growth, because of the tiger economies in Southeast Asia. We've been using fossil fuels at a greater rate than even the climate scientists and the economists predicted at the end of the 20th century. So what do we have to do? Unfortunately, climate change due to greenhouse gases lasts a very long time. Carbon dioxide has a very, very long lifetime in the atmosphere. And 25% of the carbon dioxide that my parents burned when they were driving a Zephyr or an early Holden will still be in the atmosphere, not just in 50 years, but in 500 years' time. Climate change, due to the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, will last for a millennium. But we know what we have to do to reduce climate change. There are two things we have to do. One is to adapt, and one is not only to reduce emissions, but now to suck greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere by sequestering it through photosynthesis. We have natural systems, such as photosynthesis, that are very, very efficient at taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and storing it away in soils, in plants, and in the ocean. But the scientists have failed. We have known about these problems, and we haven't been able to effectively communicate our messages. We have to do that better. And scientists haven't been able to do it. So we need to engage with writers, with artists. Perhaps the most important group to engage with is the advertising community, because psychologists and advertisers are particularly good at showing how we can create a change in attitudes in society, behavioural change and a cultural change. Our society is addicted to carbon. That addiction, like many other addictions, will have major impacts. But breaking that addiction will also cause some short-term pain before we have that long-term gain. But breaking that addiction will create and will need a behavioural change and a cultural change. And that's what's critically important within this festival of ideas. The engagement not only of these scientists like myself who've been singularly unsuccessful, but the engagement with a whole range of other groups, with writers, with business people, with a diverse range of communities from around the world, because everyone has to face climate change. And I have to finish on a positive note, because people have always told me that, how can you possibly keep doing this stuff? Because I've been working on climate change 20 years and the message has been getting worse. But I know that human ingenuity and human innovation can solve this problem. We have the technologies. Australia has a wealth of opportunities in terms of zero carbon energy sources. We have plenty of sunshine. We have plenty of wind. We have plenty of coastlines with lots of wave and ocean energies. And we have lots of geothermal energy. Human innovation and human ingenuity has allowed us to tackle major problems in the past. And if we can tackle innovation and ingenuity across society, we will be able to solve this problem. But it requires the engagement of all sectors of society. And I'm sure that the Festival of Ideas will help us on many steps of the way to tackle these problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, Professor Karoly. Our final speaker this morning is Lynn Doe. Lynn Doe is the outstanding achiever of her generation. She was a young citizen of Maribyrnong. She is an absolute star. She has founded her own business, which I want to call Bait and Switch, but it's actually called Change and Switch. If there's one thing, and I should say that she moonlights as an arts student here at the University of Melbourne. But I should say, one thing was clear in discussions around, it was that Australia was starting very, very late indeed on the climate change and adaptation to it, and that literally the sins of the fathers and mothers will be visited upon the daughters and sons, and that the next generation is going to face very steep odds indeed in combating climate change. And I really owe it to the Deputy Director of the Festival, Jaisal Shaw, who at present is duchessing a bevy of University of Melbourne professors around the US. It was really her idea to have a youth panel in which we would hear the voices of the next generation, and we happen to have captured the star of the next generation in Lindo.
First, thank you, Patrick, for that very kind introduction. I feel a lot of pressure on me now about what I'm going to say next. First off, I'd like to thank the University of Melbourne for engaging with young people in this Festival of Ideas. I was looking through the program before, and there's lots of doctors, there's lots of professors, and here I am, still a first-year art student who is yet to actually complete any assessments. I think it's nice to be acknowledged as a bright mind, because it will help me when I come to research my assessments and hopefully boost my self-esteem. I've been asked here today to speak mainly about the social and youth aspects of changing the culture that we live in now. I'd first like to start off with my work with Change and Switch. Change and Switch is a not-for-profit organisation that I founded mid-last year and have since been working on it alongside my studies and regular people work to have a source of income. With Change and Switch, one of our main aims is to amalgamate environmental issues with social justice issues. I think that this is a really important aspect of what we do, predominantly because climate change is often looked upon as an issue that is very narrow and just affects the environment and just affects how people will be affected and things like that. But what people forget to leave out is that climate change, like many other issues of our time, are interlinked with other issues. For example, with rising sea levels, Australia might not be affected immediately, but low-lying islands such as Tuvalu have already gone beneath sea level. So I think it's really important for my generation, your generation, to consider that it's not just us that will be affected, other people are already being affected now. And that's often overlooked when people look at the science, they see the physics, they see the chemistry, and they might not understand that, but people will understand that 100,000 people will become climate refugees by the end of a certain period, for example. And that's something that's needed in allowing for people to create changes in their own lives. People don't always understand science, and I know that I'm a big committer of that sin. I don't always understand science, but I do understand the humanity impacts of climate change. The second part is I often get asked why I've named my organisation Change and Switch, considering there's a lot of rhetoric in the name. And I think it relates very much to the climate change, cultural change motto of the Festival of Ideas. In terms of how I view change and how I view switch, is basically change is the smaller things that you can do in your life. It's changing your light bulbs. It's taking the shorter showers. It's doing all these things that you don't really have to think about. It's all these, I wouldn't say menial changes, but the smaller changes that everybody can make without engaging deeper into the issue. But I think in order for us to affect real change in the wider community and in our futures, we need to be able to switch our lifestyles around. We need to be able to know why we're using green power, not just because we can feel good about ourselves for not polluting the environment. I think that's something that's central to most humans. Humans need to understand why they're doing something before they can become deeply engaged with the issue and continue their sustainability. Otherwise, events like Earth Hour, whilst they do engage with millions of people across the globe, that's as far as it goes. People will turn off their lights for an hour, but how many people will actually walk away from that situation and think, wow, this is why I need to change my lifestyle around? My last point is about youth empowerment. I often, when I go to climate change talks or environmental talks, whoever's speaking will always say, and my children and my grandchildren will be affected. And what always strikes me is that it's not going to be my children and grandchildren affected. It's going to be me that's already going to be affected. And that always strikes me as something quite compelling, because I know that at the end of the day, scientists now may not be alive in 2100 or 2050, but I still could be around, hopefully. And something that's really important is, because young people are so adversely affected by climate change, because we are living through a time of change right now, but we will also be affected later on. And I think that's why young people have engaged so heavily with this issue. We see the formation of coalitions such as the Australian Youth Climate Coalition. We see all these amazing young people doing things in their communities, and it's because they know that they will be affected by climate change. However, what shouldn't be left out is the notion that climate change is a multi-generational issue. It's not just going to be me that's affected. You will still be affected too, and your children and your grandchildren. And it's not just us here in Australia. It's people everywhere in the world. There's no discriminating factor for climate change. Unlike poverty, where most Australians are not living below the poverty line, climate change is going to affect you regardless of whether or not you're rich or you're poor. And that's why I think the Festival of Ideas is really important, because it's going to generate a whole bunch of new ideas from the people that have already been generating ideas, like David Karoly, for the past 20 years of his life with working in climate change, but also from younger people's perspectives, I guess, like my own. And I think with that, what we're aiming to do with the festival is create change, and I think change can only come once people act upon these ideas. Thank you.
Lynn, thank you. Lynn made a great contribution to the 2020 Youth Summit last year and gives us all hope, I think, for the future, notwithstanding David's counterview. You can see what a wonderful director we have. You can see just a small hint of the quality of the speakers and the possibilities of conversation to become in this Festival of Ideas. So we look forward to seeing everyone on the 15th of June and put the week aside and really enjoy it. Thank you for being part of the launch this morning, for celebrating with us this great festival. Please pick up a program, join us for a cup of tea. Thank you, and best wishes in June.